The dump truck's front end struck the heavy wooden gates, but instead of the way being clear, the road was covered with muties. They all had their hands stretched out toward the wag, and their teeth bared and ready to rip into flesh. Ryan and Christy climbed up onto the steel sheet over the cab. Ryan switched the Sig Sauer to single shot, and Christy unleathered her .38 caliber Smith & Wesson. Together, they began to clear the way of muties, shooting at anything standing in the wag's way. Ryan took out a pair of muties with rounds to the chest as they stood in the middle of the road, reaching out to the wag as if they could stop it with their hands. They fell to the ground in a heap, and the wag easily drove over them, spraying blood and gore in every direction. After a few moments, it became obvious that the muties in front of the wag were no more than ants in its way. The real problem was with the muties trying to climb into the cab. Ryan let his right arm hang over the side and began to take out muties as they tried to crawl up into the cab to get at JB. Headshots were easy at this range, and Ryan took his time with each mutie, making sure he chilled the muties with a single round. On the other side of the wag, Christy was also keeping the cab clear. Ryan counted four shots from the Smith & Wesson and hoped Christy had a few extra rounds in her vest pocket. But after the first rush toward the wag, the muties backed off, or rather were content to tear apart the bodies of their fallen comrades instead of being made mutant meat by the friends' blasters.
I think we're clear!
Ryan took a look, and the road was indeed clear in front of them. There was a need to remain on alert.
Stay ready! We've still got a bus full of segment on our tail!
Ryan and Christy climbed off the metal sheet and into the steel box. There was blaster fire coming from the bus behind them, but the rounds bounced harmlessly off the rear steel door.
Need armor-piercing rounds to cut through that steel. Let's just hope we keep moving, and they don't have anything more powerful than what they're using.
They're going for the wheels!
Considering that there are eight rather large wheels at the back of this monstrous wag, probably belted with steel, I can only assume that they are in rather dire straits.
Ryan peeked over the top of the box and noticed the bus was falling behind them. More importantly, there were great plumes of steam gushing out of the bus's front end, signifying that the radiator had finally broken open. There was also more black smoke coming from the tires at the back of the bus. Presumably, all four wheels back there were on fire.
Their bus broke down!
That's it? We're out?
Looks that way.
Good. At least now I can attend to Jack.
Ryan turned to Christy.
Tell JB he can take it easy now.
Right.
Christy went to the front of the box, but stopped to steady herself when the wag took a sharp turn to the left. Ryan was about to ask what was going on when he heard them. Gas burning, diesel burning, alcohol burning engines. He looked over the right side of the box and saw a dozen vehicles heading toward the Ville. The lead vehicle was a war wag, followed by a Hummer and a ragtag bunch of old cars and trucks, each of them adapted or modified to carry weapons and men.
If I didn't know better, I'd say that the Ville is about to be invaded.
By who?
Another Baron, most likely. The visiting Baroness who was watching us in the arena would be my guess. She's probably been waiting for a chance like this for years.
And we gave it to her.
I don't care who runs the Ville. I get the feeling one Baron's as bad as the next around here. Important thing is we're out, and safe.
They all turned to look at Jack. His eyes were turned up, and his skin was covered in sweat. Mildred put a hand to his forehead, then shook her head.
Cut him down, quickly!
Ryan's panga was in his fist a moment later, cutting at the ties binding Jack to the back door of the steel box. The friends eased the albino teen onto the floor. Ryan knelt by Jack's side and turned to Mildred.
Is it withdrawal?
It shouldn't be.
Then what?
I'm not sure. All I know is that it's not good.
Baron Robards pumped the accelerator several times, but the engine wasn't responding. The steam pouring out of the bus's engine was creating a fog so thick he couldn't see more than a few yards in front of it. Finally, the engine stopped running. With the engine seized, the bus came to an abrupt halt, and several of the SecMen standing in the aisle between the seats fell forward onto the floor.
Outland scum!
The Outlanders had managed to slip away, but that was the least of his worries now. There were muties all around the bus, every one of them eager to ravage the SecMen's bodies for something they could trade for Bang. The men would have to move quickly if they wanted to get back into the Ville alive, and even then, with the main gate shattered, it would be difficult just keeping the muties out of the Ville. Robards was out the driver's window, unseen by the muties on the other side of the wag, and that bit of luck allowed him to move away unnoticed and head back to the Ville. When he was halfway to the gate, he heard blaster fire behind him. He looked back and saw several Sekhmen trying to fight off the muties, but failing miserably. There were too many of them to hold back, and the mob had already gotten their hands on blasters and ammo. The Sekhmen wouldn't stand a chance. That might just give Robards the chance he'd need to rebuild the gate and secure the Ville. Just then, he heard the sounds of several powerful wags approaching. There was a war wag at the front of the line, followed by a number of other wags that had been modified for fighting. Robards quickly realized what was going on.
That bitch Lashini!
He recognized the eagle insignia on the lead wag as the Lashini family seal. Obviously, she had been planning an attempt to take over the Ville for some time, and the appearance of the Outlanders was just the catalyst she needed to put her plan into action. The Ville was in ruins, its wags had all been torched, save for the one that had been stolen, and his Sek force was in shambles with countless dead, and the living left without a will to fight. He'd been Baron of the Ville for all of half an hour. Robards fell to his knees. Tears began to well up in his eyes as the wags roared past him and raced into the Ville. He could feel the power of their engines and smell the well-oiled mechanisms of their blasters. Robards had never felt so small in his life. One of the wags stopped beside where he knelt in the roadway.
Hey, isn't this guy the Sek chief of the Ville?
Another wag came to a halt beside the first. Robards recognized the man in the passenger seat of the wag as Sek Chief Viviani.
I've seen you before. You're Sek Chief Robards, right?
Robards was about to say, not anymore, and raise his blaster to the side of his head tied against his temple, when an alert Sek man in the first wag jumped onto the road and pulled the blaster from Robards' hand.
Take him. He might be of some use to us.
Two men grabbed Robards under the arms and tossed him in the back of their wag. And then the procession continued on into the Ville. As the armorer sat in the driver's seat of the wag, his wrists resting lazily on the steering wheel, Ryan came up to him.
Which way do you think we should go?
I wanted to take a reading with the sextant, but couldn't get to the roof of the Baron's mansion to do it. And there was too much ground light to get a reading from the street. But from what I could tell from overhearing the Sekhmen, my guess is that we're somewhere in the middle of what used to be Indiana.
Best to head east, then.
Yeah, that was my thought, too. East or south.
Yeah, head east for a while. At least until we reached that river we found the two women swimming in.
JB nodded.
How's Jack?
Pretty bad. Notice not sure what's wrong. Seems worse than just a simple withdrawal from drugs.
Those bastards. Wouldn't mind going back there and blowing up the whole Ville.
The thought crossed my mind. But we don't have any grins to do it with. We're also way low on ammo. And first thing we've got to do is take care of Jack, and he'll need plenty of water. Some food, too.
JB put the wag in gear and pointed it east. Ryan climbed up into the steel box to check on Jack.
Any change?
No, and he's becoming catatonic.
What's that mean?
Well, he goes through alternating periods of muscular rigidity and mental stupor, and great excitement and confusion.
So he could go wild again at any moment.
It's possible.
Tie his hands and feet together.
Doc, Christie, and Mildred set to work, lashing Jack's hands together behind his back, and his feet together at the ankles.
His mouth, too. But just a gag this time, in case he wants to bite somebody.
Doc took a long strip of clean cloth and pulled it tight against Jack's lips, and tied it securely behind his head, so he couldn't bite anybody in one of his wilder moments. Ryan sat down, with his back against the left side of the box.
Isn't there anything else you can do for him?
If I knew exactly what they put into his system, I might be able to give him something to counter. But I don't know what they used, so there isn't a whole lot I can do. I can't even give him something to keep him calm, because whatever I give him might interact with the drugs that are already in his system.
Ryan nodded.
We're heading for the river.
Hopefully the water will be good enough to drink.
Should be, especially since we'll be upriver from the Ville.
Good. If nothing else, Jack needs to be drinking a lot of water so he can flush out his system.
Just then, the wag hit a bump in the road, and Jack opened his eyes.
Hi, Jack.
Jack suddenly began twisting furiously against the bindings around his hands and feet. Ryan jumped on top of Jack and did his best to hold him down so he wouldn't hurt himself against the sides of the steel box. But Ryan's weight alone wasn't enough to keep Jack still, and moments later, Doc and Christie were also holding down the surprisingly strong albino teen. Mildred heard his muffled cries for help and looked into Jack's burning red eyes and saw he was in great pain and agony. She could only hope that somehow she could provide him with some relief. And soon...